Lens, where quality meets tradition. 262-577-5488.
This is The Diabetic Show, featuring Mark Philwood and Dobie Maxwell, right here on WGTD, featuring all things diabetic.
And welcome to The Diabetic Show. Mark Philwood, a proud type 1 warrior.
Dobie Maxwell, ashamed type 2, but I wear that anyway. We have been on the radio educating not only you, but ourselves in all things diabetes. We're glad you're here, and the radio show commences now.
I mean, the whole point of the show when we decided to do it was to inform, educate.
And entertain.
On a very low level.
We're not making fun of it. We're having fun with it because it could be a major diagnosis. It doesn't have to be a death sentence.
Exactly. And that's the whole point.
That's the whole point, to discuss it like real people talk.
Well, this is what I like to refer to as the all about me.
Well, it is now. So the show focuses is to you in the next little while here because you, sir, are Dr. Frankenstein, is going to put in a brand new muffler.
Yeah, isn't that neat? Yeah. It is. Yeah.
You're getting a new pancreas. Papa got a brand new bag.
Oh. No, not that.
That's James Brown.
It was a good song.
His pancreas was fine. Maybe you'll get James Brown's pancreas. That would be good. I feel good.
I can wait. So, yeah.
He's not using it.
No, that's true. We have a very special guest from the University of Wisconsin-Madison Transplant Center for Pancreas Kidney. Her name is Nancy Radke. She's the senior coordinator. We'll be speaking to Nancy soon.
That's funny. I went to school with a Donna Radke. I'll tell her that.
Small world.
Yeah.
You got to watch that. So here's the thing, Dobie. It's coming close for me. I'm feeling it.
Are you scared?
No. No, because I've already discussed this with you. If by chance in that, you know, the period I see the bright light, you're supposed to stay out of the bright light.
Okay.
Right? And because the last time I went in that bright light, I was hearing Oprah on all four screens. And
it
I
could
knew,
be a train.
Yeah. So anyway, I will be talking to Nancy. Let's hit up the news, because this is a good one, Dobie. We, for years, have been maligning the manufacturers about what they do to people with that insulin product that initially began to be a $1 patent and has turned into an $85 billion industry. Well, Eli Lilly announced plans just this last week to sell a half-price version of their injectable Humalog as it fends off criticism about those rising drug prices in the U.S.
So they'll only make $44 billion.
Here's the deal. It'll be called Insulin Lispro. Yeah, right now it makes a mere $3 billion in annual sales. You always make your body twitches when I say $3 billion. It's weird.
My body twitches anyway. Maybe I need something transplanted. I don't know.
Here's the thing. All the manufacturers have announced some price cuts recently. I don't know if you caught it with the Senate House. They're kind of in front of them, have all those big pharma folks sitting up there telling us how come they had, that research and development fund is, it's got to be that big. Otherwise, people wouldn't want to make insulin. Uh-huh. Right? Well, anyway, here's the deal. The cost of insulin is doubled in the last 5 years.
So, sure.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Now people are starting to notice it. Now they're starting to talk about it. We've had guests about how terribly it's priced, and there's no real reason outside of the obvious.
There's not a scarcity of it, is there?
No. Here's the list price for this new, the cheap. This is the cheap insulin. You ready for this? A vial, a mere $137.35.
Wow.
And for me,
it's
a
like
vial.
The Suave shampoo of insulin.
It's
99 cents for a
metric
ton.
I would go through a vial a month, maybe a little more. So, yeah.
So $137 a month, that's like a car payment for a really bad car.
But, you know, Lilly says they've spoken to various shareholders about the price of insulin, and that's who you really want to talk to, the shareholders.
Because they don't want any more money.
Also, they talk to doctors, advocacy groups, wholesalers, and lawmakers. And Lilly has come up with this great idea to just slash the price of that product to a mere $137.35 per. You know, we discussed this. Maybe they should have spoke.
You get a free $5 off car wash coupon when you buy it.
Maybe they could have discussed this with, I don't know, people who buy the product. You know, maybe they could understand, you know.
Never ask the barber if you need a haircut. Never ask the customer what they want the price to be, because it's always going to be lower.
Well, I, for my, a lot of patients on insulin, basically greedy. I'm sure, you know, they prefer food over the
food,
medicine.
Clothing, shelter, insulin. Pick
but,
two.
See, again, two out of three ain't bad. I hated that song.
Hey, we're going to be right back. The Diabetic Show. He's Mark Philwood. I'm Dobie Maxwell. Special guest coming up.
Thanks for listening. We'd like to welcome our very special guest in the studio, Nancy Radke from the University of Wisconsin Madison Transplant Program for Pancreas. Hello, Nancy. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me on the air.
Let's
you know, it's funny. I went to school with a Donna Radke, so sometimes it's easy to confuse Nancy and Donna. But we're glad you're with us.
It's weird. Okay, let's move on.
I really am happy to be here. It's always a pleasure to talk about what we do in the transplant field and continue to educate people and spread the message that
there are situations
where somebody can get a transplant.
Can I ask you one thing, Nancy? Do you have a business card by chance?
I do.
It would just be funny if you're at a party. Oh, hi, my name's Nancy. What's your business card? He says, transplant. I think it's Dr. Frankenstein. That's the first thing that comes to mind.
No, you've been with the program.
There's a lot of people that don't realize that you can do pancreas transplant.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've been aware of the program since right around a good 15, 20 years. You've been from the beginning?
I started working in the transplant field in 1984.
Hmm.
And I originally was a student nursing assistant on the inpatient transplant nursing unit. And after I finished nursing school, I came back and worked for 5+ years as a inpatient nurse and worked with some of our very first transplant patients that had isolated pancreas transplants. And then I actually took care of the very first patient that had a combined kidney and pancreas transplant as well.
Wow.
So, yeah, I guess you could say I kind of grew up with the program.
Hey, what is the percentage? Has it increased over the years that have really, like, taken? You know what I'm saying? I'm sure it's gotten smoother since 1984.
It's a very different type of transplant recovery process compared to back in the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. With some of the newer anti-rejection medications, both short and long-term success rates have really drastically changed over the years.
In a good way.
In a very positive way.
Good, yes.
Now, over these last few years especially, people have got to be calling you. What's the number one question you get from applicants when it comes to entering your program?
I would say one of the biggest things that people ask us is, how long do they last?
Mm.
Because patients definitely hear from both in the media, they go to the internet, maybe they know somebody that had a transplant, and either they hear that they aren't very successful or that they don't last very long. And UW has really been at the forefront of the field of pancreas transplantation for the last 20+ years. And we've continued to see both the one-year success rates. In other words, if we put a transplant in today, a pancreas transplant, is it going to be working and that patient is insulin independent at the end of the anniversary date of their transplant? And that current success rate is generally around 90 to 95%.
Mm, excellent.
9 out of every 10 patients should be insulin independent a year after their transplant.
Wow.
We'd love for it to be 100%, but and every once in a while we will achieve that in a calendar year. But, you know, our goal is certainly in that 90 to 95%.
What type of person? Oh, I'm sorry.
More importantly, I think, is, you know, what do the statistics look like at 5 years? You know, how many of those transplants are still working 5 years later?
Well, that was my follow-up.
It's, you know, the benchmark is looking at 1 year. Hmm. And that is data that all transplant centers have to release out to the public through the Scientific Registry of Transplant Recipients. And you can actually go to that website and look at every transplant program and every kind of transplant. So whether you're looking at comparing the rates of a liver transplant in Chicago against a liver transplant in Madison or isolated pancreas transplant, you can compare and contrast programs.
Why are there less pancreas transplants compared to some of the other organs?
Well, for a lot of different reasons. Certainly, pancreas transplantation is generally viewed as an elective type of transplant because patients really, diabetic patients, whether they're type 1 or type 2, can be on insulin therapy and generally have a fairly good quality of life. So that's the gold standard. And especially with insulin pumps and continuous glucose monitors, many patients are living much longer with their diabetes, and in particular really focusing on type 1 patients. But there is a subset of type 1 diabetics where they've lost a significant amount of their warning symptoms that keep them out of the danger zone of having a low blood sugar.
I can speak to that.
And absolutely, as you very well know, when we first started talking about pancreas transplantation, you know, we asked very detailed questions about, you know, those specific lows and what has happened. You know, are there injuries, accidents, seizures, you know, trying to figure out what is not working well for this patient in terms of their insulin therapy.
To kind of clarify.
So there's a subset.
Right. That's what I was asking. Now, Nancy, at least for me, and I can only speak for me, when I first became insulin dependent, in what, 32, 33, numbers, anyway, and I remember the very first time when you're in the hospital diagnosed as a type 1, you're in that hospital for a good five days to a week, and they would give you the insulin and kind of figure out where you should be with the units and all that good stuff. And I'll never forget my very first hypoglycemic episode. And that's basically where they have the insulin in you and there's no glucose swimming around to be absorbed or unlocked, so to speak. And what I noticed was extreme anxiety. Like you're waiting for that bus. Where's that bus? Where's that train type of a feel?
Okay.
Combined with confusion, combined with intense sweating. I mean, wet the bed with sweat.
Kind of like a New Kids on the Block concert's about to break out.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Except backstage. Mm-hmm. So that over maybe 10 years, it kind of fades. Or at least for me, it faded. The ability to know, oh gosh, I better get some sugar in me right now. And then, sure enough, a few years after that, total. I have no idea. I mean, it could hit that hard. And thank God I had a partner. Jackie's been with me forever, and she could let me know, well, yes, you're seeming a little low. So
Quart low.
Yeah, quart low. No kidding. So thank goodness for apple juice and Reese's peanut butter cups. I sit here before you today. So now, Nancy, when it comes to the stay in the hospital, okay, well, first off, let's back it up. Eventually, a person, if they cross the T's, dot the I's, end up on a transplant list, correct?
Yes.
Okay, then what happens from that point on? I mean, do you get the call in the middle of the night where you must be rushing to Madison? How does it play out?
So, depending, there's a number of different scenarios when somebody is waiting specifically a pancreas or kidney pancreas transplant. Typically, organs are first placed more locally. And so for a potential brain dead donor, where the family or their next of kin has given consent, and here in the state of Wisconsin, we have a first person consent authorization as well. So when that person has reached brain death and there has been permission granted for the process of organ donation, a decision is made to review all the medical history on that donor. We look at the amylase and lipase on the donor. We look at the hemoglobin A1C. We're collecting a lot of very detailed information about their social history on the donor. So once that donor has been determined that they are potentially a good donor for a pancreas transplant, and most pancreas transplant donors are donors for multiple organs, liver, heart, lungs, kidneys, and pancreas. Here in the state of Wisconsin, and specifically at University of Wisconsin Hospital and Clinics, we are one of, I would say, 5 to 10 fairly active transplant programs for pancreas. And we look at not only donors in our network of donor service hospitals, which covers most of the state of Wisconsin, a little bit up into the UP of Michigan, and down into the Rockford area. But we also import organs for pancreas transplants really from across a network of donor hospitals, really across the United States. So, taking
you buy any on eBay?
Mark, if there's a potential organ offer that comes in for you, that donor organ could be down in the state of Texas, or it could be in New Jersey, or it could be in South Dakota. Not very many pancreas transplant programs will routinely look at the donor organ being long distance.
And would only help.
But to answer your question, because all organs now in the United States, and this has changed over the last 10, 12, 15 years, all recipients of organs are identified before the donor normally goes to the operating room. And so if we deem this to be a suitable pancreas organ offer, and you're the next person that comes up on our list, so to speak, for that blood type, after we've done our homework and we've felt that this is a suitable organ offer, we check to make sure that it's a compatible donor for you in terms of antibodies and antigens that you have, and then we give you a call, verify that you are still feeling in okay health, nothing has changed. But if that is a import organ offer, we are going to ask you to have your bag packed and be ready to leave for the hospital, but you're still going to continue your normal everyday activities. So if you're here doing the diabetic show, it's business as usual. We will try and give you an estimate of when we can expect another update on whether or not that pancreas is going to be usable for transplant.
Okay.
So here. We actually work and partner with these outside our area hospitals and the organ procurement teams at the local hospital. They actually get us digital pictures of that pancreas to look at. And the surgeon makes that decision that that pancreas does look healthy, and then a call is placed back to our transplant coordinator on call, and then they place another call to you and say, yep, everything looks good. Go ahead and start your travels up to the University of Wisconsin Hospital.
I got a dumb question for you, Nancy. Does it matter, like, can a male pancreas go into a female and vice versa? Does age have anything to do with it?
Yes. And in addition, you know, we have pancreas donors down to about age 5.
Wow.
You know, the smaller the potential donor, the more careful we have to be looking at very detailed parameters as far as the height and weight of that donor. We will look at organ donation offers for pancreas up into the mid-40s, up to about age 50. But we're very selective because we only want to do this transplant once for that individual recipient. And through partnering with all of these wonderful, wonderful donor hospitals, you know, we have a very good success rate. And we're one of the few pancreas transplant programs in the United States that will routinely look at younger donors. It takes a lot of skill and expertise.
Nancy, let's take the break right here. We'll come back. Wanted to ask you how long, once you're in there, you know, the waiting list, how long that takes, how long we're in the hospital.
Okay.
Then we'll take the break, and we'll come right back on with Nancy Radke.
He's Mark Fillett. I'm Dobie Maxwell. Thank you for listening to The Diabetic Show. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to The Diabetic Show. Mark Fillett, type 1.
Dobie Maxwell, type 2.
And actually, Mark Fillett, type 1 for I don't know how much longer. See how this works, Dobie?
It's amazing. You know, you're getting the transplant. It's like George Jetson. The modern day is here.
Yeah, then I just have to worry about...
Used to be they were using pig insulin back in the day. Now, next thing, you're going to get a brand new one.
I'm going to miss reminiscing with you.
It's like getting your catalytic converter changed off.
Not even a little bit. Okay, we'd like to get back to the interview with University of Wisconsin-Madison's Transplant Department Coordinator, Nancy Radke. Again, Nancy, thanks for hanging out with us today and answering these questions. Now, here we are. We get the call. I get to the hospital. We'll have to cut this short only because of the time we have remaining here. How long might I be on that list waiting for that call?
So the waiting list time depends upon what your blood type is. So it's rather short for patients who are blood type O, blood type A. We measure that time in a matter of a few weeks to maybe a month or two for an isolated pancreas transplant. The blood type O patients typically wait anywhere from a month to 6 months here at UW.
Mark, what kind of blood type do you have?
I don't know. I forgot.
You're blood type A.
Thank you. A
really?
As an apple.
Okay. Right.
Better than a B.
Yeah,
a.
So we're really looking at a very short amount of time for a patient like Mark.
Sweet. See that?
It also does depend on if there are other patients on the list ahead of that person, and it also depends upon if a person is sensitized, and that comes from blood transfusions, pregnancies, or prior transplants.
Nancy, we got
somebody like Mark. It's going to be short.
We had a ton of questions to ask you. Just before we get off the track here, could you please give us maybe some insight, a website, an email, someplace that you could go if you want to find more about this without getting a chance to talk to you personally?
Oh, sure. Just go to the uwhealth.org website.
Good. But make sure that gets out there.
Go under services, and you get to our transplant program link.
Okay. So, Nancy, they're wheeling me out of the operating room now. So I'm going in my head here. I'm getting through all that stuff. Now I'm on the downside. I get back to the hospital room. Am I then what? Non-diabetic?
So with a working transplant, we consider you to have a history of type 1 diabetes with a functioning pancreas transplant.
Okay, so then how do I fill out those forms in the future?
It doesn't take away your history of diabetes because of the complications, but you have a working pancreas transplant.
So then I no longer have to X. So I don't have to put the X in the diabetes box any longer? Or is there a special box? I get a special box.
That's complicated.
I figured it might.
Does he get a good parking space? Does he get the handicap parking space?
Well, I'd settle for the pregnancy parking space.
At Dairy Queen, because now he has a good pancreas.
Okay, let's move on here. Okay, how long am I in the hospital for after the surgery?
So the typical length of stay for a pancreas transplant is about a week. I have some patients go home as early as 5 days. Some people stay a few extra days longer than that, but our average is about a week.
I imagine
that is insulin independent.
Absolutely miraculous.
Wow.
Can't think of a different word. Can you? It's amazing to me.
The whole thing.
Yep, sure is.
Because I'll tell you, as I went through the program.
It is very surreal for a lot of people.
I mean, I played Operation as a kid. I could take out the wrenched ankle. Now this is like, take out pickled pancreas, and you walk home, and you're not a diabetic anymore. Fascinating.
You could take out that pencil?
Yes.
I couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You had the shakes.
Yeah. All right. Also, Nancy, the question you've already hit on, the pancreas lasting. But now let's just say people are interested. What is their first step in getting to you, or at least your program?
So there's many different ways. I mean, people can go through our website and put in a request to have some back and forth conversations via email. I certainly do recommend people discuss this with their endocrinology team, whomever they may be. They can be referred by their endocrinologist, but they also can refer themselves to our program, and then they go through a screening interview with myself, and we collect outside medical records and then try and figure out if this is a reasonable step going forward.
I did notice as we went through, I remember for the very first call that we had as far as being the potential patient, it almost felt like a job interview. I felt there was a test going on. First, you had to make sure that I would be a good fit for the program. And then after we did that, the wife and I, we went up to the campus, University of Wisconsin-Madison, and we met with a team. And
it team. It is a team approach.
Exactly. That's the only word that you could we met with everybody. Anybody who could possibly be part of this. But the one thing I did notice, Nancy, is that you were like, through everything. You're kind of like the main, and things kind of branch off from you. You do a heck of a
job. Is to help coordinate the process. So it's everything from the pre-screening interview to insurance approval for the evaluation appointment. We're there to answer questions for patients and their families as they come up. Once all the testing is completed and the person has had their evaluation appointment, and it's also my job to submit a packet of information into insurance and get the insurance approval. So it does take a team effort with the surgeons, the nutritionists, our pharmacy staff, our social worker. We all play a role in helping to make sure that this is the right thing to do for the patient, and in addition, make sure they have key elements in place to have a successful transplant.
Nancy Radke, Senior Transplant Coordinator, University of Wisconsin-Madison Pancreas Team. I really appreciate your time so much, Nancy.
And when Mark comes up to get his transplant, we want to buy you lunch, and thank you for being on it. I can't believe it.
Yeah, we'll get you a coffee mug.
You know, I would say one more quick thing.
Sure.
This is a little bit of a plug, too, for the kidney and pancreas program. So anybody that's out there listening, we do transplant patients with type 2 diabetes for a combined kidney and pancreas transplant as well.
It's a two-for-one sale.
A new change in the last, really 4 or 5 years, it's become much more common.
How do you do it? Volume.
There's lots of changes out there.
Thanks, Nancy. We really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon. Hopefully after Mark is out.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'll get Nancy Radke. The whole thing, Dobie, you know, like you said, surreal. I mean,
it's modern day. We're in the newfangled age, brother.
Yeah, take a bath with the Reese's peanut butter cups.
What are they going to do with your old one? Are they going to, like, put it in the Smithsonian?
Believe it or not,
the Smithsonian?
Stays there. It stays there.
Yeah.
Long story short, they kind of staple the new one up against the small intestine.
Oh, really?
I'm on my way.
Nice.
Yeah, something to do. Again, we'll take the break and actually, you can do the editing here. We'll just do the close right here. This right? Okay, we'll do our close.
Okay. Actually, we're running out of time for this episode. We'll be back. If you want to know more, go to our website, thediabeticshow.com, Mark or Dobie, D-O-B-I-E. If you want to ask us questions, more guests, more fun, more shows coming up soon. Thank you for being here.
Have a great day.
Aloha.
Thank you for tuning in to The Diabetic Show, featuring Mark Philwood and Dobie Maxwell. For more information or to stay in touch, visit thediabeticshow.com. Until next time.
This is WGTD-FM. You're listening to Education.